So if you know that the asset that you're buying today is artificially pushed down in value because of extremely high temporary interest rates, why would you not want to buy that asset today?
Welcome to Real Estate Hackers, where you'll hear how real estate investors grew something from nothing.
Property management is going to become more tech.
Our entire business today is based off of a hack.
What if you could put $1,000 into an apartment building project on your phone?
With YouTube, with podcasts, you can catch up very quickly to a seasoned investor.
Now here's your real estate hacker host, Chad Gallagher.
All right. I am incredibly excited today. We have one of my favorite people I've met in my real estate endeavors, definitely a unique and interesting guy who has done a lot. And I feel like every time I talk to him, he's doing more. So I'm excited to hear what he's up to now, get some really great insights. Neil Bawa, thanks for joining, part of Grow Capitus and Multifamily University. Thanks for coming on here.
Well, thanks for having me. Very excited to be here. And it's great to meet with industry professionals and talk, because this is a tremendous time with both distress and opportunity. And so this is a time to be listening to podcasts and getting information, because for those in the right place at the right time, it could be very profitable.
So Neil, I was going to do this second. I'm going to actually start here. I would say about every other person I meet in real estate these days says something like, should I buy real estate in 2023? And they may word it differently, or should I wait, or should I be patient, or I'm gonna wait. And I'm interested when you're asked that question, should I buy real estate in 2023? No one's got more data than you do. What do you how do you respond to that?
The only answer, and I'll give you a very flat answer, is absolutely. This is a strong time to buy real estate. And here's why. If you asked me that question 3 months ago, I wouldn't have given you this answer. 6 months ago, no, don't buy. 12 months ago, don't buy. 15 months ago, don't buy. 18 months ago, don't buy. For one very simple reason. Real estate, especially multifamily real estate. Now, I'll be more focused on multifamily simply because that's the asset class that I know well. You can apply some of my comments to other asset classes, but not to single family, because that's different. Bottom line was, by the end of 2021, because of the recovery from COVID and because of the trillions of dollars of liquidity that was injected into the United States economy, both directly by helicopter money and also by pumping liquidity in by lowering interest rates to zero, something bizarre had happened. Every asset had become ridiculously, unbelievably overvalued. And I'll tell you the story of how ridiculously overvalued multifamily was. In Q1 of 2022, which is roughly 18, 19 months ago, assets, older assets, were selling for an average of 3.36 cap rate. For those of you that understand 3.36 cap rate, you look at that and go, that is insane. Another way of putting that, for those of you that don't understand cap rates, is it might actually take you up to 30 years to get your money back that you've invested. That's how low that 3.36 cap rate could be, right? Not in every scenario, but in some scenarios, it might take you 30 years just to make your money back. So it was absurd. It was ridiculous. Everyone in the industry knew it was absurd and ridiculous. So the people like me called it out and said, hey, we're just going to sit on the sidelines. There's absolutely no real way to make money here. But that didn't actually happen with the industry, because in that quarter, the first quarter of 2022, thousands of multifamily properties were transacted at these absurd numbers. Now, none of those properties had any trouble raising money. Why? Because investors were in this mad, completely ridiculous, completely insane frame of mind where they were like, nothing can go wrong. Why? Because properties were going up and up in value. The US stock market was going up and up in value. Bitcoin was going up and up in value. Everything that could go right with the economy was happening, and there was no inflation yet. So inflation was still at that point of time at about 2.5%. Nobody was paying any attention. So at that point of time, crazy stuff was happening, but every investor was pumping massive amounts of money into these properties. Today, the situation is radically different. So for those of you who understand cap rates, we went from 3.36 cap at the end of Q1 2022 And the cap rate went up, which means prices went down. So cap rate went up from 3.36 to 3.72, then roughly 4%, then roughly 4.5%. And by the end, by halfway through 2023, which is where we are now, halfway through 2023, the cap rates have moved from 3.36 cap to 4.72. Now, for those of you that don't understand cap rates, let me make it simple. That is a 29% change in pricing, a 29% decline in pricing. Now, not every metro has declined 29%. Some of the boomtown metros have declined closer to 20%, right? And many of the properties that have been sold in the last 18 months were really crappy properties anyway. So even though the cap rate has changed by 29%, prices have changed by about 20%. So today, any investor that was willing to invest 18 months ago at absurdly high prices and absurdly ridiculous rent bumps, I ask those investors, why wouldn't you invest today? Because today you're getting a 20% discount. Today, the underwriting is assuming 1 or 2% rent growth, not 3 or 4% to make numbers work. So the assumption is we need less rent growth to make money. We need less rent growth to have cash flow. The only thing that's wrong today, if you want to call it that, is the higher interest rates compared to 18 months ago. But you know this, once you buy a property, it's purchased. You can never get that money back. So if you overpaid by 5 million, no matter what happens, you overpaid by 5 million. That doesn't change. But if you underpay for a property, and I'm arguing today that you're actually getting a pretty decent value and it's slightly under priced. I'm not saying it's 20% underpriced, but I'm saying that there's an underpricing happening. Because today, the only thing that is determining the price of properties is interest rates. Nothing else. We're not, the United States economy is doing phenomenally well. Take the most bullish person from a year ago, he would still be wrong. She would still be wrong compared to how well the economy has done. We produce jobs at twice the rate that we were projecting to produce. As of July or mid-July 2023, the S&P 500 is at an all-time high in history. In the middle of the highest interest rates in 35 years, the S&P 500 is at an all-time high. So when you look at the performance of the economy, it is truly outstanding, right? And so you have an asset class that is a necessary asset class, multifamily, and we have an economy that is truly outstanding. Goldman Sachs yesterday on the 17th of July raised its chances of a soft landing, no recession, from 70% to 80%. And many other analysts are doing the same. They're saying there's now a very small chance that we go into a recession because the economy has withstood these interest rate hikes. So you have a very strong economy. You have an asset class that is continuing to perform. Rents are continuing to go up, even though they're not going up at crazy levels, but they're going up. We don't have a demand problem of the sort that the office sector has, where demand has fallen off a cliff. There's no evidence that demand for multifamily has moderated. It's gone, our occupancy has gone down from 96% roughly to 95% roughly, which is nice. You see some adjustments, that's always a good thing. So overall, you have robust demand and an incredible economy. And the only thing keeping the prices down are interest rates, which all of us know is a short-term phenomenon. If you don't understand that, look at the last 50 years and tell me how many of those 50 years did we have high interest rates? The short answer is really 1974 to 1984, which was tied to an oil crisis. The US is currently not in the middle of an oil crisis because, as it happens, we are the world's largest energy producer, both for oil and for gas, because of the miracle of shale. We are almost energy independent, though not quite. And so we can't have an oil crisis of the sort that we saw in 1974 to 1984. But even in that crisis, we did not see a real estate crash, and that was 10 straight years. But leave that aside, because that was an unusual situation of, OPEC blackmailing us. There is no evidence that interest rates stay high for more than a few years. The Federal Reserve is the most I would say conservative organization in America, and the only one I trust, because everyone else has some political bias and the Fed doesn't give a damn. The Fed just wants to get inflation down and the Fed wants to get employment up, right? That's their mandate. They have a straightforward mandate, right? And because they're an independent body of private organizations, politicians can't put a lot of pressure on them and have not been able to put any pressure on them in the past. And so the Fed has done exactly what was supposed to do: massive, incredible, repeated rate hikes. right? If there was pressure from politicians, they wouldn't have done this. Even the Fed says that we should be back at 2% inflation within the next 18 months. So if you know that the asset that you're buying today is artificially pushed down in value because of extremely high temporary interest rates, why would you not want to buy that asset today? I simply don't understand what investors think today. And that's because I think that 90% of investors are not investors. They are speculators.
So Neil, as always, tons of data, tons of insight. I want to hone in on, you're getting at something kind of interesting, which is when you buy a property, the purchase price is the purchase price. But the interest rate is something, you know, a lot of times when people model properties out, they will model out the interest rate for the next 15 years as if it's flat. Which what's interesting is that that's not always the reality. I mean, if the interest
rate- It's never the reality.
Right. And what's interesting is, depending on how you play your cards, you can sort of play your cards in a way where you're, you've basically capped your risk, but you have this lottery ticket if interest rates do go down, because you can lock in lower rates. Obviously something that you can't do on the purchase price because you've already purchased the property. I'm curious, based on what you're saying, and I think this is maybe the million-dollar question right now for investors, is how to structure debt in July of 2023. And I'm curious of how you're thinking about that.
It's a straightforward answer. Both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are now offering loans that step down in interest rates if interest rates fall, but the rates are still locked. So you now have, for the first time, I actually don't know if this ever happened in history before, because of the rapid increase in interest rates, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are offering loans that are locked. So your interest rate is locked. So your downside risk is curtailed because you know what your rate is. But they're giving you the ability to actually move to a lower interest rate in the future. It's not as simple as, well, whenever the rates go down, you can go down. It's not as simple as that. But they have certain covenants that if rates go down a certain amount of time, you pay a certain amount of money, and now you can switch to a lower rate. Well, that is incredible. That is amazing. People haven't done that before. Now, why would Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac be stupid enough to do things like that? Well, it doesn't cost them anything. They're still charging you a pretty high fixed rate today. And then in the future, what they're saying is, if rates go down a lot, I'll be able to take you down, maybe not all the way to where you would have been. So somebody buying then would probably still get a better rate than you, but you can drop quite a bit. So now you're getting the arbitrage of having lower interest rates in the future, which everyone, 100% of the people predict, right? But you're still getting the benefit of a lower purchase price today. The mechanism exists and has existed for a number of months. I think that those came out 3 or 4 months ago, and you know, more and more people are learning about them and going, whoa, this, I should be underwriting for this. I should not be saying that interest rates are going to be 5% for the next 5 years of my hold. By the way, if you think that interest rates or Fed funds rate is going to be 5% and mortgage rates are going to be 7 or 8% for the next 5 years, here's what I'm going to say very bluntly. No one can and should buy a syndication multifamily at all in the United States. There isn't a property in this country that should be purchased if you're assuming that interest rates are going to stay at 5.25. Stay out of real estate, right? That is the only logical conclusion. But know that if you make that conclusion, not only are you never going to buy real estate or you'll just make bad bets, know that there's no one else that is on your side. No one else. No bank, no investment bank, not the Federal Reserve, not the politicians, and not the analysts. There is no one else that believes that interest rates will stay this high. Now, I hear investors saying interest rates will stay high. And the answer is, based on what? Well, you know, I've heard this and I've heard that. And it's the same kind of stuff. Go back and look at what people were saying in 2009 on YouTube. According to them, real estate would not recover until 2025. Right? Hopefully you didn't listen to them back then. There's always someone that takes the worst case scenario to get more views on YouTube or whatever their channel is. So what you shouldn't do is make that the basic premise. You should listen to it. You should absorb it. You should benefit from it. But look at all of the mainstream, if every single one of those, even the most conservative people that 18 months ago were telling you, don't buy anything, even those people are saying, maybe you should buy now. So they've changed their mind and they're data-driven. Maybe you should listen to them. Why would you take the worst case scenario when you're getting massive discounts today?
Neil, I love that Fannie Mae product. You're the first person I've actually heard. I don't spend quite as much time in the multifamily space as obviously you do, so I didn't know that was a product. That's got to be the first time in a while.
As far as I know, it's only available for multifamily. It's not available for office. It's not available for self-storage or hotels or retail. As you know, multifamily is a privileged asset class, Chad, because there are two massive organizations, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that are quasi-government organizations whose mandate it is to provide lending and debt liquidity for multifamily. There is their mandate and single family, right? But they don't have a mandate to provide anything for hotels or retail or any other kind of asset class. The only asset class that benefits from this is multifamily and, of course, single family, which has a Congress mandate. And you might say, well, do they have enough money? The answer is they are flush with money because in 2022, they didn't get rid of all the money that they did. 2021, they did run out of money at the end. 2022, they didn't spend enough money. Now they have a lot of money and very few transactions happening. So they're very flush with cash. So they're creating solutions to get the cash out the door.
Right, it makes sense. I'm interested in your, so the other product like this I've heard is, and I just heard this for the first time, some guy, one of the banks up here in the Northeast was offering a product where it was interest only with no prepayment penalty, which I thought was interesting. Now you pay a little bit higher interest rate, but you're basically saying, and you're locked in at a certain rate, interest only. And I think it's like, you have to refi probably next 5 years or something like that. But it gives you that ability to say, look, at some time in the next 5 years, I feel pretty good, rates will come down, and then I can refi into a long-term product. That's another version, I think, of what Fannie Mae is offering. It's a little bit different, but same concept. I would assume you view favorably upon a product like that.
It would be better potentially than that Fannie Mae product because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will charge me fees anytime I want to change, things. They will charge pretty hefty fees. So if a product like that exists, even if it's a 1% difference between a Fannie Mae loan at 5.5% and this loan at 6.5%, I would pick that loan because my premise is that I cannot find data to support that the United States economy can stay at 5.25% interest rates for a number of years and not crash, right? And you might say, well, okay, so you're assuming that if rates stay high, we will crash? The answer is yes, we will go through a recession. And guess what happens in every recession that we've had since the Second World War? We have to drop rates because demand basically craters. When demand craters, there is no positive inflation. You're afraid of deflation. You're terrified of deflation. Remember, the Fed has amazing tools against inflation and has deployed all of them in the last 18 months, right? They've done quantitative tightening. They've raised interest rates. You can clearly see inflation, which was at 9.1%, core inflation or CPI, was at 9.1% 13 months ago. And last week it came out at 3.1. Clearly the Fed has tools and they've gone from 9.1 to 3.1. They work. Do you know if the Federal Reserve has any tools against deflation? The answer is no. No Federal Reserve has ever shown a tool against deflation. They're far more afraid of deflation. So when you go into a recession, the last thing the Federal Reserve wants to do is have high interest rates. And there's no reason for them to have interest rates because a recession by definition is a collapse in demand. When demand collapses, how can you possibly have inflation? You immediately turn into deflation. And so they're cutting interest rates down. So there is just no mathematical scenario that anyone has ever shown me on the web that shows that our economy can continue to be stable for a number of years with 5% or even 4% Fed funds rate. It has to come down because then it only results in a crash and a crash takes interest rates back down.
Neil, what are your thoughts on, I've also heard a couple of people who are trying to negotiate to basically assume the mortgage on the property, which was probably locked in at a lower interest rate, and then getting some private money on top of that, maybe even a short-term bridge loan on top of that. Are you looking through any of those kinds of scenarios? Because a lot of these people are holding notes that have interest rates at, 3 to 4%, rather than tear them up, try to push that forward. Are you seeing that in practice at all, or are there some things that are holding that up that don't allow that to happen?
I'm currently buying a property in Tallahassee where I'm assuming a loan. Now, this property was unique in that I did not add private money. I did not add any money on top of it. The loan is already 73% LTV on my purchase price. Why? Simply because I am going into a tier three metro like Tallahassee, where I'm paying 5.2 cap. Now, there are a lot of other people paying 4.6, 4.7 cap, which is sort of today's price. I'm selling a property, and I can tell you there's a 99% chance that the buyer of that property will do exactly what you just mentioned. The answer is the devil is in the details. If you're on top of that low interest rate, adding a lot of private debt, and that private debt is at a high interest rate, the risk that you're taking is pretty substantial, right? So is this something that should be done? Yes, it's still better, in my opinion, than the other options. But the devil's in the details. How much more equity do you need to raise? How much more private debt do you need to take to make your deal work? So I think that fundamentally, as an idea, it's a good one. Unfortunately, there are not enough properties with assumptions that are available in the market for the demand. So it's going to remain sort of a niche, in the next year or two. But I think it will help.
Yeah, and look, you're doing a deal. So I mean, that tells you. Neil, I guess, do you look at the single family home market at all? Do you think about that space? Or are you so narrowly focused on multifamily? And if you do look at single family, I'm curious, do you think a lot of the same paradigms you're talking about push into single family as well?
So I'm fascinated with single family, even though, you know, I am a multifamily investor. You know, I own dozens of single family homes myself, but I don't have any investments for investors that have to do with single family. I just like it. I like that area because it is my belief, which is not a common belief, that the entire multifamily market is just an adjunct of the single family market. We only exist because multifamily does not supply enough single family. And so that single family market, you know, it allows us to exist as an asset class because supply and demand has been out of whack for decades, right? And it's very difficult for that supply and demand issue to go away. We're currently, I see numbers of 4.3 million homes short in the United States. I don't believe that at all, by the way. The number that I like is Ivy Zelman's 1.7 million number. That's still a massive shortage, by the way. It's not as bad as people think, but it's a big number. And I think it'll take us a pretty long time to get to that number. So I can tell you, so I'm going to answer your question, Chad. No, the multifamily market situation and single family market situation are radically different. Almost everyone that has predicted single family declines, including myself, has proven to be wrong. And the real reason for that is 90% plus of all single family loans in the United States are locked in for 30 years under 4%, right? So the lock-in percentage is so high that people have chosen to rent their properties rather than sell them because they know that they can't get what they need. They can't get the cap rate that they want. They can't get the pricing that they want. So what has actually happened is a humongous number of properties that would have been transacted for sale have become rental properties in the last 12 months. And that has put a tremendous stabilization layer under the single family market. Over the last 18 months, multifamily properties have gone down, 20-ish percent. Some people say 17, some say 21, fine, whatever the number is. You want to know what the single family price decline is? Five, okay. Just five. It's 5%. And I can tell you that if I take 10 bubbly markets in the United States out, it's flat, right? I'm going to just take like a dozen markets that, went like, up take, 70 or right, 80, take Austin, 90%, right? So Austin, Phoenix, Boise, and a few others. Like if I can just pick 10 markets and take it out of the United States, it's flat, right? Because those markets didn't go up 70% in 2021, 2022. They went up 20 or 30%. Obviously, there's inflation in the marketplace. People are holding. And so what has happened in the single family market is inventory is down radically. It's down ridiculously. So even the most dangerous single family markets in the United States, like the San Francisco Bay Area, where I live, only down 15% and now climbing. Why climbing now? Well, obviously, there was an initial negative impact and prices went down. But then what happened is people adjusted to these new rates. They started doing creative things like 3% down mortgages and things like that, getting loans from mom and dad, Or what they've started to do is adjust for the fact that inflation is pretty high in the United States. Remember, normally, when inflation in the United States is 5%, home prices go up 5%. Well, right. in the San Francisco Bay Area, if they've gone down 14%, that's not a 14%. It's 14% plus about 8% for 1.5 years of inflation adjustment. So it's really 22, 23. So now even this market, the San Francisco Bay Area market, is seeing slight, small price increases. I don't know of any unstable real estate single family markets in the United States right now. There are 322 markets in the US. I don't know of any that are unstable. Now, that is not the case for multifamily. Phoenix is currently unstable. There are a few other markets that are at risk of becoming unstable, and we'll learn more over the next 6 to 9 months. Remember, there are 2,500 properties under a DSCR of 1. For those of you that don't know what that is, basically there are 2,500 properties that don't make enough money to pay back their mortgage, or they're bleeding. Those 2,500 properties, and by the way, I'm only talking about the 2,500 that are recent purchases. So if your property is bleeding today, but was purchased 10 years ago, you have made so much equity in that property that, you know, when you're tired of the bleed, you'll still sell it. There's no distress. You'll just go to the market, you'll sell it. You'll probably sell it for millions less than you would have sold 2 years ago, but you'll still make a huge amount of money because you bought the property 10 years ago. So these 2,500 properties are only properties that are multifamily properties with bridge loans that were purchased in the last 3 years. That's the only section of the multifamily industry that we are going to see distress on. All of that distress is in the next 12 months. So I'm curious to see which markets become unstable. You know, currently, Phoenix is unstable.
Wildly interesting. I want to close this part of our thing off with, you mentioned land. Everything else you've told me makes me think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you are on the hunt for land right now.
I am on a mad hunt for land. So the only time in my career where I have seen land to be so flexible and so cheap was in 2009. And I'm still early in the process, right? So I'm still, in my mind, early. So, I mean, the dramatic change that has happened in land in the last 12 months is just mind-boggling. Land is a weird asset class. It's nothing like multifamily because land goes from when everything is all right, it's outrageously expensive, to the moment that people don't want to buy land, it becomes, I don't want to use the word worthless, but it becomes illiquid. You can't sell your land. You just can't sell it, right? People don't want to buy it. And during those times, you get amazing deals. So I can tell you, and the numbers that I'm giving you are exact. In the last 45 days, we have sourced 125 parcels of land in about 20 markets in the United States. None of these are major markets because construction costs are out of control. So, you know, so wouldn't work. But in secondary markets in the United States and one primary market, one, Atlanta, construction costs are low enough for me to source land. And I am making ridiculous offers on land. Land that was worth $2.5 million, I am now making offers at $1.1 million. And not only am I making offers at 50, 60, 70% off those crazy prices, in addition to that, my offers are simply, in the next 6 months, for whatever reason, I can get my deposit back. Instead of $250,000 in deposit, I'll give you a $50,000 deposit. And 6 months from now, that deposit will go hard. But even if I don't get the rezoning or the full city approval in the next 12 months after that, I will still get my deposit back, right? Now, contrast that with what I had to do to buy land 18 months ago. 18 months ago, for that same piece of land, I was paying 2 to 3 times. My deposit, instead of $50,000, was $250,000, and I had 60 days to close the land. Now I have 18 months. It's sickening. I am going to sit on $200 million of land by spending $2 million, and I'm going to get 18 months to figure out what the heck to do. It's sickening.
It's interesting. And I don't know if you're seeing this. I'm starting to feel, and you're more an expert at this than I am, but I do talk to a lot of developers. And I'm hearing zoning boards. It's starting to seem like zoning boards are being actually a little more flexible for at least the first time in my career. I think they're being pushed saying, look, we need more low income housing type places for people to live. Are you seeing that? Are you seeing zoning boards be?
So the short answer is certain states. So I'm absolutely, I would say Texas has not gotten the memo yet. But California has, because California is losing population, Texas is gaining population. So I haven't seen that. But a lot of mid-level states. So these are states with low property taxes where they're more welcoming. So Alabama, Tennessee, Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Utah, Nevada, Idaho. Idaho is great. So these states are really loosening up zoning. But here's the coolest part, Chad. 18 months ago, if I was buying land, 1 out of 4 pieces of land that I was putting in contract was zoned. Now it's 3 out of 4. Why? Because I have a choice. The number of buyers in the land market is probably at 20% of what it was 18 months ago.
So is that all driven by interest rate? Is that what that is? That people are just modeling these things out and the higher interest rate. Now the new construction guys are like, uh-oh, this might not pencil. Is that?
So the vast majority of projects in the United States currently for construction, if you want to do construction in the next 12 months, don't pencil, right? So the demand for land has just dropped. The other thing is land is a speculative thing like Bitcoin, right? So a lot of people that want to buy Bitcoin say, I will buy this Bitcoin and it will go up in value over the next 12 or 18 months. Well, land was filled with speculators, mostly IT people that were just basically buying pieces of land that weren't even zoned. And they were just basically doubling their money in a year. Like their money would go up 50% to 100% in a year. And now, of course, those people are taking losses. So none of them is buying the next piece of land. So they would buy an acre, double their money, then buy 2 acres, double their money. And now that 2 acres is worth what the 1 acre was. So they're not buying that next piece of land. So speculation has completely exited the land market. Gone. No one's flipping land anymore. So the only people left the land are developers that fully understand construction costs. And that puts us in an incredible position. So I invite anyone that wants to look at this and understand just how lucrative this is to look at a website called Mission 10K. You have to type in, 10K. So mission10k.com. And you'll understand what I'm doing and what my investors are doing because I can't say that multifamily is on a fire sale. It's not. I mean, it's on a sale. I think it's a good time to buy multifamily. Land is on a freaking fire sale. Everything is available, not just for cheap, but for an extended period of time. With $50,000, I can control land that used to cost $2.5 million, and I can control it for 18 months. How do you get anything better than that, right? I mean, with a $5 million fund, I can have control of 100 pieces of land without paying anything. And most of them are zoned, not unzoned, so I'm not paying for zoning either, right? So there's always opportunities in distress. I can tell you there's way more opportunities during distress than when things are going okay. Like, for example, I have a rescue fund now. What does my rescue fund do? It doesn't buy any properties. It looks at properties that are good properties, overperforming, but bleeding money simply because they didn't have a rate cap or their rate cap's too high. And so they're bleeding for only one reason. The mortgage is the problem. There's nothing wrong with the property. And so now those people have been bleeding for like a year. And now all their GP money is gone, the operating money is gone. And these good general partners are coming to people like me that have rescue funds and saying, we need $5 million so we can refinance this property to perm. Otherwise, we're going to have to give the keys back. And look, my property is performing. I can see its performance clearly is awesome. Its rents are rising. Its NOI is rising. The problem is the rents are not rising as far as the interest rates are rising, because the interest rates have more than 2.5 times increased in the last 2 years. Obviously, you're not going to see a 2.5 time increase in NOI in 2 years. It might go up by 10 or 20%, showing you that it's a good property. So they're in trouble. And there's rescue funds like us coming in saying, sure, we'll give you $5 million, but we come in ahead of your investors. We don't want to take any risk, right? It's your investors' risk. We know that there's equity in this property. There's nothing wrong with the property. We simply have to get it stabilized. And the moment it's stabilized, it cash flows. And we sweep the cash flow. We don't let the property's existing investors get any cash flow. And they're still okay with it. They still will approve us doing this. You know why? The alternative is they sell the property today at a high cap rate and lose half of their money.
Right. Right. They have a time problem, not a property problem.
They don't have a property problem. If they can kick the can down the road 24 months, there's nothing wrong with these properties. Now, of course, that I'm talking about 10% of the properties that come to me for rescue funds. The remaining 90% are in the Jesus can't save you category. right? And so it's very obvious with, you know, an hour of work, which where they are. But then 10% of the properties are, you only had one cardinal sin in that your interest rate was too high. Everything else, this property, I would buy it today, right? Well, now I don't have to buy it. I'm just simply going in and sitting on top of all the existing investors in a very preferential position in a rescue fund. If I had launched a rescue fund 12 months ago.
At what, an interest rate of 12% or something?
6% front end, 10% back end. So it's a sort of a 16 or 18% return.
Yeah.
Right? And again, you're not taking any risk because you know that there's so much equity in the market that if things don't get better, you just sell the property. And the other investors, unfortunately, will lose their money, but we'll get it back.
Right. It's fascinating as always. Thanks for the insight. Super interesting stuff. Buy land, buy multifamily, but I guess hold on actually building right now. Is that part? Is that the last part?
Yeah, I think new construction, you shouldn't really be getting started in the next 9 months, I'd say, and possibly 12, sort of depends on where we go from here. But I think for the next 12 months, new construction doesn't make sense. I think value adds do make sense and will make more sense every consecutive quarter. So right now I'm saying buy value adds with caution. And I'm saying in Q2 of next year, buy everything you can. So we're going to go from caution to must buy in about 3 quarters. Why? Because those 2,500 properties that are bleeding, the majority of them, their loans adjust in Q2 next year. So they would basically have to make critical decisions in Q1 next year.
Fascinating as always, Neil. If people want to reach out to you, what's the go-to? How do you find Grow Capitus? I know I've read some of your stuff you send out once a week, I think. What's the way to kind of get on your info?
So Multifamily University is the best place. I do a very large number of webinars, and we're doubling the number of webinars this year that we're doing. So I'll be doing 12 webinars, and 25,000 people sign up. It's always free. There's no subscription. There's no true up. There is no educational product. You never buy anything. So you go to multifamilyu.com, multifamilyu.com. And next week or the week after next, I am teaching a webinar that I think I'll have 2,000 or 3,000 people signed up. So it's called California's Massive Economic Challenges and Who's Going to Benefit the Most from Them. Then a few weeks later, I have a new one, Everyone's a Speculator, How Investors Chase Bad News and Overbullish Trends to Speculate and Run Away from Profit. So those are the next two webinars. And then I have one coming up that is close to my heart, which is How Artificial Intelligence Will Change the Entire World. So those three are my three upcoming webinars. And hopefully you're part of the 5,000 or 6,000 people that sign up for those.
You got me as a user, that's for sure. I want to close with one final question I ask every guest. And your artificial intelligence thing makes me think I know where this is going, but I don't want to cede the answer. I always ask folks one thing they're most excited about at the intersection of real estate and tech over the next, you know, call it 18 to 24 months.
18 to 24 months. Nothing in that time frame. So I'm going to say nothing in that time frame, but in the 5-year time frame, I'm extremely interested and excited about the concept of 3D printing homes. I think 3D printing technology needs about 5 years to mature. But once you get to volume, we're going to be able to do some crazy, batshit crazy stuff and change the way that we do real estate in the United States and even in the world. So other countries are actually ahead of the United States with this. I think we need 5 years. So very excited, but I don't think we're going to get there in 2 years.
You know, I'm going to ask you a quick follow-up on that. I've had this belief that at some time in our lifetime, if that actually comes to fruition, which it probably will, it will have an impact on price point of real estate. Because up till now, the only way to get new real estate was to build more, you know, basically what I would call like traditional build properties. And to build those today is more expensive than it is to buy these existing single family homes. Does anything in the back of your head think like in 10 to 20 years, not too far out, we could see existing real estate, you know, homes built in the 50s, 60s, 70s, potentially have a decline in price being driven by just this overhaul in 3D printing of houses?
The answer is there's a 100% chance that there will be a real estate price crash in the early 2030s for two reasons. One is 3D printing, which will become economically viable. It takes a long time to be viable. Just remember, Tesla's cutting prices of the Tesla 3 today in 2023, but in 2017, they were losing $30,000 on each Tesla. It takes a long time to create scale and make profit, right? So Tesla is right now the most profitable company, car company in the US, but they were losing the most amount of money in 2017. You come that way, it takes 6 years. There's no way to speed that up. So in the early 30s is where I think 3D printing really gets to the point where it starts to impact the pricing of real estate and availability of real estate. But there's something bigger that's happening. So I am radically different in my beliefs about the battery revolution, because most people do not understand the exponential rate at which battery technology is improving. There are 168,000 gas stations in the United States. In 10 years, 80% will be gone. Can you imagine prime land in every city in the United States, 3 to 4 acres already zoned for commercial usage, easy to rezone to single family. That is 800 million square feet of prime space available in the United States for real estate. That'll bring land costs down. 80%, 90% possibly of gas stations will be gone in 10 years because the rate of acceleration of EV sales is incredible and is far beyond what anyone had projected. It's the rate of growth that matters. Number of EVs is irrelevant. It's obviously small. You know, China's already, 1 in 3 cars sold in China in June were EVs. Why? Because they were cheaper than gas cars. Scale does that. Anyone who's not interested in buying an EV today will buy one 7, 8, 9 years from now when they're $10,000 or $15,000 cheaper, because fundamentally an electric engine is much, much simpler than a gas engine. And at that point, who's going to need gas stations? You're going to need some because you have millions or tens of millions of existing cars. But I think 80% of those are gone. So early 30s is, in my mind, a real estate crash in the United States. And I'm gearing up for that by being on the other side of it with 3D printing and basically taking over gas stations and repurposing them.
Fascinating as always, Neil. You're never one to just give the most cliche answer. I love that. Thanks so much for joining, and we'd love to have you back on here again sometime on the Real Estate Hackers Show.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Real Estate Hackers Show. If you've not yet become a member of Real Estate Hackers, you can do that for free at realestatehackers.com. Get access to all of the amazing real estate hacker deals from incredible vendors, on a ton of content and materials for you, the investor. You can follow Real Estate Hackers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you can give us a 5-star review for the podcast, I would personally really appreciate it. We read every review, and thank you so much for helping us grow this community for you, the real estate investor.